From WHYY in Philadelphia, this is Fresh Air. I'm David Bianculli, sitting in for Terry Gross.
Oh, so you are the Christ, y'all, the great Jesus Christ. Prove to me that you're no fool. Walk across my swimming pool.
Our series of favorite interviews from 2012 continues today with Stephen Colbert. We'll hear some of the music that means a lot to him, like King Herod's song from Jesus Christ Superstar. Turns out, there's a connection between the character he plays on The Colbert Report and that song.
That opened my eyes as a kid, that you could actually be wrong in character. You could be blasphemous in character, and it doesn't negate how you feel about the subject.
Love me or leave me.
We'll also listen to Terry's interview with Doris Day. She talks about how she started singing and making movies and why she left Hollywood. Day, who turned 88 this year, appeared in 39 films, the last one in 1968. First, the news. This is Fresh Air. I'm David Bean Cooley of the website TV Worth Watching, sitting in for Terry Gross. This week, we've been revisiting some of our favorite interviews of 2012. And we conclude the week by presenting two more, Terry's visits with Stephen Colbert and Doris Day. We'll start with Colbert in an interview which focused exclusively on his musical interests and influences. His Comedy Central show, The Colbert Report, is largely political satire. But Colbert loves music and loves to sing. So he often has on guest performers and sometimes sings with them. Last year, Colbert performed in the New York Philharmonic's production of Stephen Sondheim's musical Company. Terry interviewed Colbert in the fall after the publication of his latest book, America Again, Rebecoming the Greatness We Never Weren't.
So I've made it clear to you several times on Fresh Air when you've been a guest in the past that I love it when you sing. I love it when you sing on stage. I love it when you sing on your show. I love it when you sing with guests on your show. So someday I hope maybe you'll sing on our show. But in the meantime...
That'd be fun.
In the meantime, we asked you to bring some of your favorite recordings so we could talk about music. And so you sent us the names of a few recordings. We have them ready to play. So I thought we'd start with the first one, which is a song from Jesus Christ Superstar, which I assume you first heard when you were very young.
So, yeah, I think it was probably 7 or 8 when I first heard it.
And was
the Broadway, the Broadway cast recording.
The Broadway cast recording. Okay. And right. how did you hear it?
One of my brothers and sisters had it, maybe my sister Lulu or something like that. And just for the record, Terry.
Yes.
The three songs that I picked for today, they're not necessarily my favorite recordings. I just thought like, what are just three songs that mean something to me and are, almost specifically aren't my favorite recordings. I just thought of three different aspects of my life, and I thought, okay, are there any songs that just speak to that? And the first one would be Herod's song, King Herod's song from Jesus Christ Superstar. And I just remember hearing it as a kid, and it's an upbeat, contemporary song in an otherwise very, very serious, you know, musical. And it's the only song that's sort of comedic in Jesus Christ Superstar. And as a child, I remember thinking it was scandalous because the lyrics go, Herod is facing Jesus and he says, "Oh, so you are the Christ, you're the great Jesus Christ. Prove to me that you're no fool. Walk across my swimming pool. If you do that for me, then I'll let you go free. Come on, King of the Jews." And I thought as a kid, like, oh, that's so blasphemous, that's so scandalous, and yet I loved the song because I was from a fairly devout family. But even as a young kid, my mom said, no, that's fine. That's exactly how they would have spoken to him.
Far worse,
that's just a
yes.
You know what I mean? But that's like a theatrical expression of mm-hmm. contempt. And that opened my eyes as a kid that you could actually be, well, you could be wrong in character. You could be blasphemous in character, and it doesn't negate how you feel about the subject. You know, like the greatest example is just because I play a murderer doesn't mean I'm a murderer. In the same way, you could actually mock Christ in this song, effectively mock Christ, and you know, comedically mock Christ, and yet it's not a mockery of the story.
Well, that's kind of like you were 7 and figured out what it means to be in character, which you now are so much of the time on your show. It's like this is the roots. This is the roots of your character.
Well, certainly my ability. Certainly, it's the first time I thought, oh, you can make jokes about religion that aren't anti-religious.
Right. Great. Okay. So let's hear the version from the original cast recording, 1970, Jesus Christ Superstar, and here it is.
Jesus, I am overjoyed to meet you face to face. You've been getting quite a name all around the place. Healing cripples, raising from the dead. And now I understand you're God. At least that's what you've said. So you are the Christ, you're the great Jesus Christ. Prove to me that you're divine. Change my water into wine, that's all you need to, and I'll know it's all true. Come on, King of the Jews.
Jesus, you just won't believe the hit you've made round here. You are all we talk about, the wonder of the year. Oh, what a pity if it's all a lie. Still, I'm sure that you can rock the cynics if you try. So you are the Christ, you're the great Jesus Christ.
So that's King Herod's song from the original Broadway cast recording of Jesus Christ Superstar, one of the recordings that Stephen Colbert brought with him when we asked him to bring some recordings that have meant something to him over the years. And we did this because
I could do that whole musical, by the way.
Really?
Just start the,
were you,
you
ever
start
in it? It's one of those musicals, everybody was in Hair.
No. I'm not really a musical guy, but I if you just started like the opening, down, like the opening of Jesus Christ Superstar, I could probably sing every note and every word from the beginning to end.
Okay.
I love that musical. So, I don't even know if it's good. You know what I mean? At this point, I have no idea whether it's even a good musical. It's just too much like in my DNA.
Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. So let's move on to another recording that you named as one that's been important to you. And this is Elva Costello, who, unlike King Herod, has actually been on your show several times,
right.
including on your great holiday special a few years ago.
Right.
And tell us what this recording is and why you chose it.
This is a recording. This is a demo that Elvis Costello did in a hotel room. It wasn't released on an album originally. I think it was... I've loved the song for about 20 years. It was released as an album extra off of My Aim Is True, a reissue in the early 90s. And it's called Jump Up. And what I like about it is, one of the nice things about having a show is I've gotten to meet a few of the people, artists that I really love, and Elvis and I have become somewhat friends, which I just can't believe that occasionally there'll be a voicemail on my phone from Elvis Costello telling me he just ran into Bill O'Reilly in Reykjavik. That's a completely surreal message to get on your cell phone to a kid who was rocking out to, armed forces. But I love the song because it's sort of a satirical song. It's got a parodic nature to it, or not a parodic nature. It's got sort of a political satirical song, and I've never discussed this song with Elvis, so I might get a message from Elvis Costello after this interview with you saying, "You know nothing of my work. What are you talking about?" But I've always thought of it as it's a person who is talking about insignificance in the face of power or of something that they want. And also talking about the hypocrisy of politicians. There's the second verse goes, candidates talking on the radio from the cheaters' jamboree. He must be their old latest fool, because it's a two-horse race and he changes bets like it was just another brand of cigarettes. Some people judge them, they just guess the rest. They can't understand it, don't mean that you're blessed. They got to catch the express, next stop nowhere, that way you can't forget. Jump up. Hold on tight, can't trust a promise or a guarantee, because the man round the curve says that he's never heard of you or me. And I've always loved that line, it's a two-horse race and he changes bets like it was another brand of cigarettes. And back long before I did political satire, I thought, yeah, isn't that interesting? There are only two choices and people flip back and forth as if it doesn't matter when there should be bold lines between these two people. And it's just got one of my favorite lines of any song in it. The poetry in this line about it's a young man. He says, I'm not sure who the character is, but the young man says, I was a statue standing on a corner. Tell me, how else can a boy get to see those pretty pleats? And that seems like a young man who has no personal power. He's a statue standing on a corner. No one's noticing him, but he's looking at the girls going by. And he's trying to figure out how am I someone significant enough to be noticed? How else can a boy get to see those pretty pleats, which clearly means their skirt? But also it's got the word pretty please in it. And so by describing what he wants, he's also describing how he feels about what he wants. Let me see your skirt, pretty please. And those kind of lyrics are all through Elvis Costello's work. And I'm sort of in awe of his ability to often write in character, like as Spike the Entertainer. Mm-hmm. He sort of writes in character. He's wry. He's sort of sardonic. And I'm not a musician, but his music speaks to me and is If there were somebody's songs I wished I had written, it would be Elvis Costello's songs. And this is a song, one of the first songs I can remember thinking, God, I wish I had written that.
Okay, so let's hear it. This is Elvis Costello, Jump Up. It's a demo recorded in a hotel room or a bedroom or something in the mid-70s. Very lo-fi Elvis Costello, a great recording.
Everybody's talking like they can't sit down and looking like they can't stand up. It must be the latest style. And they've seen a lot of things that you never see. Back on the mile up to the hanging tree. Some people can't keep their fingers clean, just clicking their heels to the beat of the scene. Trying to keep careen until the first edition of last night's obituaries. Jump up, hold on tight. Can't trust a promise or a guarantee, 'cause the man round the curve says that he's never heard of you or me. No tombstone would ever surprise me when I'm locked in a room about half the size of a matchbox. Got holes in my socks, they match the ones that I got in my feet. I put my feet in the holes in the street and somebody paved me over. I was a statue standing on the corner. Tell me, how else can a boy get to see those pretty pleats? Candidate talking on the radio from the Cheetah's Jamboree. It must be their latest fool, 'cause it's a two-horse race and he changes bets like it was just another brand of cigarettes. Some people judge, then they just guess the rest. They can't understand, it don't mean that you're blessed. They ought to catch the express, next stop nowhere, that way you can't forget. Jump up, hold on tight. Can't trust a promise or a guarantee, 'cause the man round the curve says that he's never heard of you or me.
So that was an Elvis Costello recording from the mid-70s, which was chosen for us by my guest, Stephen Colbert. We asked him to bring some recordings that mean a lot to him. Because I love his music so much, because I love Stephen Colbert singing so much, we wanted to go musical today on the show. And the occasion for this interview is Stephen Colbert's new book, America Again, Rebecoming the Greatness We Never Weren't. Something else you want to say about Elvis Costello?
Oh, well, yes. I had a conversation with Elvis maybe about 6 months ago, which, again, is a very weird thing, sentence for me to say. But I had a conversation with Elvis about 6 months ago. We were talking about the song Radio, Radio. And I don't, you know, this is Elvis's story, so I hope he doesn't feel like I'm stealing something from him. But he said that the song Radio, Radio was originally sort of anthemic. It wasn't sort of a biting kind of aggressive song. It was about how great radio feels. And I said, oh, that's interesting. And he said, yeah, people don't ask him much about it, but that he was trying when he was younger to try to write Bruce Springsteen songs. And that he really liked Bruce Springsteen's sound. And he said, but then he eventually stopped doing that because he would try to write these songs and like Bruce Springsteen and it would end up writing things that were a little bit wry, sardonic, or sort of even sort of character-based. And they didn't have that sort of sincere anthemic quality that a Bruce Springsteen song sometimes has. And that kind of blew me away because he is describing his relationship to Bruce Springsteen kind of like my relationship to Jon Stewart. And John's favorite artist is Bruce Springsteen. And probably my favorite rock artist is Elvis Costello. So there's an odd parallel between Elvis's evolution from what he was trying to do, like Bruce, and my evolution from what I was trying to do when I worked with John.
That's actually really interesting. So I want to...
God, I hope so. Because I just stole Elvis Costello's story. And if I didn't make it interesting, God, I'm in trouble. All right.
Stephen Colbert speaking to Terry Gross earlier this year. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. We're repeating some of our favorite interviews of 2012. Let's continue Terry's interview with Stephen Colbert, discussing not politics, but music.
Okay, so let's go to another recording. And this is a Ben Folds 5 recording, and perhaps not coincidentally, he was just on your show.
Yeah, it was on my show 2 nights ago. And I really like Ben Folds. And every night, actually, at my show, just for fun, at one of the commercial breaks, we usually play his song, Stephen's Last Night in Town. And we'll sometimes play, I love the song Philosophy by Ben Folds, and I like a lot of his stuff. But there's one particular song that I just love called The Best Imitation of Myself. And there's sort of an obvious resonance for me because I do an imitation of myself professionally. And the lyrics go, you know, I feel like a quote out of context, withholding the rest, so I can be for you who you want to see. I got the gesture and sound, got the timing down. It's uncanny. Yeah, you'd think it was me. Do you think I should take a class to lose my southern accent? Did I make me up or make the face till it stuck? I do the best imitation of myself. And when I first heard the song, it was just a few years ago, actually. Somehow the song had escaped my notice. I just thought he'd written it for me. But then when I listened to it more, I thought it's just a beautiful expression of how we are toward each other as people. We don't think that we are sufficient for each other, that no one wants to know the real me or the whole me. I just want to give you the part of me that I think you expect to see from me. And almost as if that little part of me is more than the whole of me, because I don't want to give you any of the poison. I only want to give you the meat of me. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
And this constant slight changing of our mask, or as Eliot says in Proof Rock, time to prepare a face for the faces that we meet, I just hadn't heard in a song in the same way as this one. And I couldn't love this song more.
Were you already doing the Colbert Report when you heard this?
Yeah, I'd already done the show for a few years when I heard this song. And I mean, even it says, like, you know, if it's all the same, I've people to entertain. You know, I'll juggle one-handed, do some magic tricks, and the best imitation of myself. And
you could probably do that. I know you could stand on your head.
Right? Yeah. Anyway, it's, you know, it's a great song for an entertainer to listen to. But what's beautiful about the song to me is that we all play the entertainer for each other.
Yeah.
Just some of us do it professionally.
And some better than others. Okay. Mm-hmm. So this is the Ben Folds 5, Best Imitation of Myself, one of the songs chosen by my guest, Stephen Colbert.
I feel like a quote out of context, withholding the rest, so I can be free what you want to see. I got the gesture and sounds, got the timing down. It's uncanny, yeah, you think it was me.
That's Ben Folds 5, Best Imitation of Myself, and it's one of the songs Stephen Colbert brought with him today because we asked him to bring a few songs that really mean something to him, and we did that because I really love Stephen Colbert singing so much. So what's some of the music you grew up with in the house that your parents or older siblings were playing?
Well, I'm the youngest of 11 kids, so a lot of the music I listened to was like hand-me-down albums from them. So as a kid, I listened to a lot of James Taylor and Gordon Lightfoot and Deep Purple. I mean, it was pretty eclectic. It's whatever the older ones left behind. Nancy Sinatra, Paul Anka, Elvis Presley, mm-hmm. you know, Creedence Clearwater. It's because my eldest brothers and sisters, my brother Ed, bought an original 45 of Bill Haley and the Comets, Rock Around the Clock. But my closest brothers and sisters, you know, left behind Cat Stevens' Tea for the Tillerman. So I listened to all that because those albums were just laying around. So basically from the beginning of rock and roll through the, you know, mid-70s soft rock, folk, post-folk, feel-good festival, I listened to all of it. I didn't really have a singular music that I listened to. I can't say that I was like, I was a Who guy or I was – I mean, the Beatles were gigantic. They eclipse everything on the musical landscape. It's hard to imagine a band more important than them to me. I don't know musically, but that argument can be made, obviously. But the Beatles were the biggest and most important. But I wasn't sort of slavishly devoted like some people. Their identity was associated with a single group.
Stephen Colbert speaking to Terry Gross earlier this year. His latest book is America Again: Rebecoming the Greatness We Never Weren't. We'll continue their conversation in the second half of the show. I'm David Bianculli, and this is Fresh Air.
Celebrating Fresh Air's 25 years, the Neubauer Foundation salutes WHYY and listeners like you, committed to new ideas and civilized conversation. Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from Republic Records, with selections from the Les Miserables soundtrack, including I Dreamed a Dream and Suddenly, available now. From Ally Bank, who believes in getting more from your news and your money, offering money market accounts. Learn more at allybank.com. And from the George Lucas Educational Foundation, creator of Edutopia, a source for what works in education. Learn more at edutopia.org. This is NPR.
You'd be so easy to love. So
coming up, Doris Day. She turned 88 this year. She'll tell Terry about how she started singing and making movies and why she left Hollywood. And more with Stephen Colbert.
The yearning for so swell to keep every home fire burning for we. So grand at the game, so carefree together, that it does seem a shame that you can't see your future with me, 'cause you'd be out so
This is Fresh Air. I'm David Bianculli, sitting in for Terry Gross. This week, we've been revisiting some of our favorite interviews of 2012. And one of them is Terry's interview with Stephen Colbert, when she talked to him about his musical background, influences, and passions. Let's get back to that conversation.
So when you were very young, did your parents play music in the house?
No, not really. No, not really. We sang. We were all encouraged to sing at all times.
What, around the piano or guitar?
No, just around the house.
So when you sang around the house, did you sing harmony, and what songs did you sing?
No, we didn't sing harmony. Like we have a few family songs. Like, you know, at a drop of a hat, anyone in our family will sing, I am my Don Quixote, the Lord of La Mancha, my destiny calls and I go. Or we'll sing, you know, we'll sing Men of Arlek from the movie Zulu, which is kind of our family movie. We'll sing, you know, This is what they're singing when the Zulus basically breach the line and kill everybody, and Michael Caine, you know, dies in his movie debut. You know, what's it called? Like, men of Arlek, stop your dreaming. Can't you hear those? Men of Arlek, stop your dreaming. Can't you see their spear points gleaming? See the warrior banners streaming through this battlefield. In at weddings, at family weddings, the men will get on one side of the room and we'll sing Men of Arlek. And the women will be across the room and do the Zulu chant and they'll attack us. And then we'll meet in the middle of the room and hug. It's really lovely.
That's so funny.
True story.
No, were you ever in summer camp or anything like that where you had...
No. I mean, I 11 kids, it was always camp.
Were you ever in a band?
Yes. Oh, yeah. I was in two bands. I was in a band in elementary school. I was in a band called Nebula 5. And there were only three of us.
Cosmic.
In Nebula 5. And because Nebula was a cool word and a cool thing. And 5, I didn't... We kind of picked 5... because we thought 5 was the best number. We didn't ever occur to us that the Jackson 5 were because there were 5 of them. And, you know, as an elementary school kid, you're always like, what's the best color? It's blue. Wrong, it's red. It's blue, stupid. Or like, what's the best number? It's 3. It's 5. 5 is definitely the best number. And so we thought 5 was the best number. So we were Nebula 5. It was me, Tommy Whittle, who at the time in third grade called himself Tommy London. That was his stage name. And Gray Motzinger on drums. And I sang. And then in high school, I was in a band briefly called A Shot in the Dark, and we did mostly like Rolling Stones covers. And we would like play at a party for a free beer or something like that.
So did you do Mick Jagger parts?
Yeah. Like Honky Tonk Woman and stuff like that, Brown Sugar, all that kind of stuff. I'd strut around on stage.
Would you really?
In a jersey. Oh, yeah.
Oh, gosh.
I mean, you got to move, baby. You got to move. you got to give the ladies what they want.
Did you sing in church?
No. Uh-uh. I was never in a choir. I was in my school choir. Uh-huh. I was a bass in the school choir. And you know, we did a lot of religious music in my church. It was a religiously affiliated school, and so we did things like we would do like Mozart's Mass kind of religious music. And I still remember the bass line to things like the national anthem. You know, in my mind, I almost can't sing the national anthem, the melody anymore. I have to sing, you know, oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming? Whose bright stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight or the ramparts we watched were so gallantly streaming? And the raw. You know, I can't remember the melody anymore.
You have quite a range, though, because I wouldn't imagine you being able to get that low, because I know you have a nice high range.
I'm actually much more comfortable really low.
Seriously?
I'm much more comfortable singing, you know, oh, Jesus Christ Superstar, the Caiaphas, great bass roll, is, no, wait, we need a more permanent solution to our problem. What then to do about Jesus of Nazareth, miracle, wonder man, hero of fools? That's the part for me is Caiaphas.
Well, now you just need to be in a production. So one more music question: if you could perform in any kind of music venue, would it be a Broadway show? Would it be a rock band? Would it be a country band? Would it be an opera with Audra McDonald? What would it be?
Probably a show. You know, because I'm an actor and I like a story. So a show. I mean, King Herod, man, playing King Herod. One song, it's in my range. Call me.
Okay. Well, Stephen Colbert, thank you for bringing music with you. Thank you for singing for us. It was just such a treat. Thank you so much.
It's always a pleasure. Thanks, Terry.
Stephen Colbert speaking to Terry Gross earlier this year. His latest book is called America Again, Rebecoming the Greatness We Never Weren't. Coming up, another of our favorite interviews from 2012 with Doris Day. This is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm David Biancooley, filling in for Terry Gross.
What have you accomplished? Can you produce a picture? Have you done one successful thing on your own? Just who do you think you are?
Whoever I am, kiddo, I'm what makes you tick.
That's Doris Day having it out with James Cagney in the 1955 film Love Me or Leave Me. It's one of the four Doris Day films Warner Home Video released in a DVD box set in celebration of her 88th birthday, which was in April. Also on that occasion, Sony Masterworks released a 2-CD set of Doris Day recordings, which she curated. We're going to listen back to Terry's interview with Doris Day, continuing our Holiday Week series featuring some of our favorite interviews of 2012. Here's Terry.
I was thrilled to be able to celebrate Doris Day's birthday last April with an interview that I recorded with her. Before I tell you why I love her singing, let me tell you why, when I was young, I didn't. This is the reason.
Que sera, sera. Whatever will be. The future's not ours to see. Que sera, sera. What will be, will be.
Although that song is from a Doris Day movie I like, Alfred Hitchcock's The Man Who Knew Too Much, I hadn't yet seen the film when the song played constantly on my parents' radio station for years, the station they tortured me with when what I wanted to hear was rock and roll. Day's romantic comedies of the 60s also seemed like they were for my parents, not for me. Then I grew up and started listening to jazz and jazz singers, and I heard some of Doris Day's recordings with just a pianist or trio. Her voice is so beautiful. You'll hear what I mean on this 1962 track with Andre Previn that's included on the new TCM CD reissue.
Fools rush in where angels fear to tread, and so I come to you, my love, my heart above my head. Though I see the danger there, if there's a chance for me, then I don't care. Fools rush in.
So the next step for me was going back and watching her early movies and finding songs like this one with the Paige Cavanaugh Trio from her first film, Romance on the High Seas, released in 1948. This movie is also included in the TCM DVD box.
For me, I'm sure of this. Each time we kiss,
ladies in love,
now and forever, and when forever's done, you'll find that you are still the one. Please,
lady said please,
don't say no to my plea.
Pretty good, right? In 1954, Doris Day starred opposite Frank Sinatra in the film Young at Heart. He played a songwriter, and at the end of the film, they duet on the song his character writes. And if you're a fan of Day and Sinatra, watching and hearing them together is something special.
Yes, and because of you, my love, my wishful dreams came true.
Certain heart, I am only certain of how I love you, my love.
So I've told you some of the reasons why I love Doris Day. I guess everyone who loves her has their own reasons, and when I say everyone, I mean lots of people. Doris Day is the biggest female box office star in Hollywood history. She started singing in big bands when she was a teenager, made her first film when she was 24, and after making about 40 movies, walked away from that part of her life in 1968. After that, her mission was rescuing and caring for animals. Doris Day ended her public life many years ago. We phoned her at her home in California. Doris Day, welcome to Fresh Air. I know you rarely give interviews, so let me start by saying that even if we only get to speak for a few moments, I'm so excited that I get to wish you a happy birthday and tell you how much your work means to me. When I grew up, your movies were very popular, but I kind of thought of them as my parents' generation, likewise with the recordings. But when I started making my own taste, I fell in love with your early recordings, and that led me to your movies, your early movies, your later movies, and I just love your work.
Thank you so much. You're so sweet to say all those nice things. Ugh.
I have to say, your voice still sounds like Doris Day's voice.
Does it?
Yeah.
Well, that's good, huh?
So, I'm wondering, when you gave up acting and performing, your last movie was in 68, your last TV, I think, was in 73, and you've been avoiding the public eye and keeping photographers away, but did you still enjoy singing, even if it was just around the house?
Oh, I love singing, but I had bronchitis, which I've never had before in my life, and only when I moved here. And it was very, very, very rough on me. I think that my voice is, it seems that it's different to me, and it makes me feel terrible because I love to sing so much. Sometimes I sing around the house. Sometimes I start singing, and it sounds like me, and I feel, so good about that. And sometimes it doesn't, because the air up here is so different than when I was in Los Angeles. It's totally different.
So did singing always feel more pure to you? Like, I always think, like, when you're in a movie, you're playing a part. But when I hear you singing, I just feel like that is you. That is like just cutting to your essence. There's something so beautiful and also naked about it. Like, I don't feel like you're playing a character. Do you know what I'm saying? It's just, I feel like I'm hearing your essence.
Well, that sounds good to me.
But did you feel different as a singer than as an actress?
No, not at all. I just, I was put in a film. I had never acted, and then I discovered that I would be singing in that first film, and it was just natural. It just came so natural.
And that was Romance on the High Seas.
Yes.
You became famous for your romantic comedies in the 50s and 60s, but there was this image of you that became formed that the characters you played were kind of, like bland and a little stereotyped or something. But really, when you look at the roles you played, like, you're a working woman, and you're an independent, single working woman in some of those, like, really classic films. Like in Pillow Talk in 1959 with Rock Hudson, you're an independent interior decorator. In Lover Come Back to Me, 1961 with Rock Hudson, you worked in the advertising industry. In Touch of Mink with Cary Grant, 1962, you're a career woman. So, you're actually playing these independent working women.
That's what I was. For real.
For real, right. For real, you must have been pretty tough, actually.
Oh, I don't know.
No?
I don't know about being tough. But what we were doing was something that I was just loving. I just loved my work, and whatever they wanted me to do, I wanted to do.
Did you get the sense that there was this, like, image of who Doris Day was that was sometimes not really who either your characters were or who you were?
No, I didn't. I just did what it wanted me to do. I didn't compare, in other words, and say, oh, God, I'm not like that. When I read the script, the words told me what I was. I never had a problem with that. I played me doing that.
Is that the way you saw it, playing yourself, but as somebody else?
Playing myself, no matter what it was.
Playing yourself as if you were in that position of your character.
That's right. It had to be done like that. I had to say things like that. It was fine.
What was the biggest stretch for you, the character most unlike you?
Oh, they were all different. I didn't feel different in any of them, even though they were different. I loved, you know, being married, and I loved not being married, but working on it and doing what I was supposed to do and be. That's the way I worked.
So I want to confess something to you, which is when I was growing up, the first real big hit of yours that I knew was Que Sera Sera, which you sing in The Man Who Knew Too Much, the Alfred Hitchcock film. And so my confession is that I didn't like it.
I didn't either.
And that's what I read, that you didn't like it either. So tell me why you didn't like it.
Well, the first time that somebody told me it was going to be in that movie, I thought, why? Because the movie, you know, how horrible it was toward the ending when our boy was kidnapped. And I didn't think that there was a place to put that song. And I heard the song before I knew what the story was completely. But then they tell me that that's going to be in the movie. I thought, why?
And for anybody who doesn't know the song, the lyric is, Que sera, sera, whatever will be, the future's not ours to see, Que sera, sera.
Yeah, and I thought, I'm not crazy about that. Where are they going to put it? For what? Is it when I put him in bed sometime and I sing that to him or something? I did that in another film. And I thought, maybe that's what it's going to be. And I didn't think it was a good song.
And just standing on its own as a song, did you like it?
No, it isn't the kind of song that I like to sing.
So how did you feel about that being, there's probably a number one hit, and yet you didn't really like it very much?
Well, I thought that was wonderful because I think it became that because of children. And then I understood it because it was for the child, for our child in the movie.
Right.
I realized, so maybe it isn't a favorite song of mine, but people loved it, and kids loved it, and it was perfect for the film. So, you know, I can't say that it's a favorite song of mine that I think is fabulous, but boy, it sure did something. It came out, and it was loved.
Doris Day speaking to Terry Gross in April. We'll continue their conversation after a break. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to Terry's April 2012 conversation with Doris Day, one of our favorite Fresh Air interviews of the year.
So you left the movies after 1968. Your last film was With Six You Get Egg Roll, and it was the same year that your husband of the time died. Why did you leave movies then?
I don't know. I thought that I had done all the different things, and I loved doing them. And then I had a feeling of just quieting down, and I came out to Carmel, and it was so nice. You know, and I have so many doggies, and I thought, this would really be nice to get out of Los Angeles because it was changing down there quickly, and it wasn't good. And so I came up, and we redid a home, and I just moved in, and that was it. And to be in films, when I think about that, then I thought I should have stayed because I loved that so much. But there were all kinds of new people coming up, and I thought, I've done mine. I've had a great time, so now it's their turn. And that's the way I felt.
But it didn't have to be like one or the other. You could have lived in Carmel and still made movies, maybe fewer movies, but you could have.
Yeah, I could have, but I have so many dogs that I love dearly, and I was working and helping the SPCA. I rented a place that I could have dogs, not in my house. I rented a big place, and I was able to have the SPCA every end of the week bring many, many dogs to me. They all were in nice places. Clean, everything was fine. I took good care of them. And so many people called. Darling ladies came and said, I want to help you. I work for nothing. I love dogs, too, and cats. And I said, well, that's great. And so that's what I've started to do right away. And I just loved it. I placed dogs with wonderful people and lovely homes, and the dogs were just precious. And then one day a woman came out where we always did the work and said that you're to get off the property. Who's Doris Day here? You're out of here in 2 weeks. It was just rude, and we managed to get out. And I kept all the dogs that I had there.
Where? Where did you keep them?
In my house.
Oh, gosh.
I have a big, big house.
How many dogs was that?
At one, about 30.
Oh, my God. Are you kidding?
No. And I kept them.
You kept them all?
Yep.
30?
Mm-hmm. Well, I had a big, big house here.
How big was it?
Oh, big.
Like how many rooms?
Oh, my gosh. 3 upstairs, 4 upstairs. So downstairs, a lot of rooms.
Okay.
It's so difficult. And then I had my own area in another spot. It was connected, of course, and that was just perfect for me. Everything was right. It was good, and I could have as many dogs as I wanted. I kept them until they went to heaven.
Wow, you really live with a lot of dogs for a long time.
Well, see, there was another area of the house, and they had a big run. They had a huge area to play. They were just fabulous, and I kept them all.
So how many animals do you live with now?
6.
I would have thought that was a lot. Now it seems like nothing.
Well, I can, when I...
Are they dogs or any of them cats?
Yes, cats, too. Lots of cats.
How many cats?
Oh, God, maybe 10.
Now?
But I have lots of room. Oh, yeah, and they're in a special area in the house. They have an outdoor area. It's closed. They can't get out. But the ceiling is all glass, and they look up there, and they see the trees. And when it rains, they love it. And it's perfect for them.
So I guess I just want to say thank you. thank you for the interview. Thank you even more for your movies and your music. I'm so happy that I've had the chance to talk with you, because I know how little of this you do.
I'm happy that I had a chance to talk to you too, Terry. And it is Terry, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Isn't that funny?
Oh, because that's your son's name, yeah.
You're really good at what you do.
Oh, thank you.
And I enjoyed it a lot. I really did.
Oh, that makes me so happy. Thank you.
And it's so nice to say hello to you and to know you.
Thank you. Thank you. I wish you good health.
And I wish you good health.
Thank you.
And I send my love to you.
Doris Day speaking to Terry Gross in April on the occasion of her 88th birthday. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our engineer is Audrey Bentham, with additional engineering support from Joyce Lieberman and Julian Hertzfeld. Dorothy Farabee is our administrative assistant. Roberta Sherrock directs the show. For Terry Gross, I'm David Bianculli.
I hear music when I look at you. A beautiful theme of every dream I ever knew. Down deep in my heart, I hear it play. I feel it start, then melt away. I hear music when I touch your hand. A beautiful melody.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from Republic Records, with selections from the Les Miserables soundtrack, including I Dreamed a Dream and Suddenly, available now. From the Melville Charitable Trust, supporting solutions to prevent and end homelessness, on the web at melvilletrust.org. And from Focus Features, with the new film Promised Land, starring Matt Damon and John Krasinski, from the director of Good Will Hunting, now playing in select theaters. This is NPR.
We celebrated our 25th anniversary this year. On the next Fresh Air, we end the year with our special anniversary show. Join us.